Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
We wanted to find out from you your favorite TV theme throughout the years. Yes, it's been done, but hell, it feels like a Friday. Great time to do it. How can you not smile? It's time for action. If it doesn't take you back to 1985, something's wrong with you. If you weren't alive, Google it. YouTube it. The 80s were a special time.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan, the A-team here of 680 The Fan. Losin for the King. Chuck back on Monday as we get moving in our 4 o'clock hour. It's brought to you by South Point Financial Services. If you're looking to refinance your home or investment property, you need to contact South Point Financial Services at SPFS.com. We're live at Big Game here at 720 Ralph McGill Boulevard. It's just an awesome-looking sports bar. Incredible menu. Just a perfect spot to come watch baseball tonight. We're here with Creature Comforts Classic City Lager. We have gift packs to give away, 680 The Fan shirts, baseball tickets, and more. Thanks to Creature Comforts Classic City Lager. Good, cold beer. So Los is in for the King, which means he's on College Football Today duty. He's got 1 in 5 minutes. Tease us.
This Pirate is going to get a chance to live up to the hype.
All right, we'll get to that. Coming up in 5 minutes. But first, are you here to tell me the Falcons are on the right track at least one important position?
I'm not sure if it's going to be Marcus Mariota. And I know that we're supposed to be really hardcore opinionated about this sort of stuff and say it's definitively Marcus Mariota or it's not. I will say that there's going to be something different that we haven't had in Atlanta in a while. And nothing against Matt Ryan, but Matt Ryan's game was not to move around. He was to sidestep in the pocket, find a lane, throw the football, and he did it at a near Hall of Fame level.
But when Matty Wheels would pull the ball down,
we would be surprised. We all would go, oh, my God. And every now and then, there'd be something cool about it.
When arms and legs were pumping and he was trying to get that first down, it was fun to watch.
There is something about Marcus Mariota, and there was an ESPN article by our own Michael Rothstein talking about just one of the plays in training camp where he surveyed during red zone drill, didn't see anybody open and realized here's a lane and took off from about 18 yards out and scored. Because Marcus Mariota's always been able to do that of the course of his career. Now, that's ended up with some bumps and bruises. We know that's kind of what happens with him. But that is one of those elements that is now part of the NFL game where I'm not asking my quarterback to run 20 times a game. I'm asking my quarterback when it's 3rd and 8 and you really need it a couple times a game, he can go get it with his legs. And that's something we're going to have. Now, I hope that that's going to be part of every quarterback that comes through. You get that with Desmond Ridder as well. He was another guy who went out and ran 4.5, 4.6 at his size. Pretty good speed. He can move around a little bit. Whoever it ends up being the long-term answer, that's one of the elements of the game that we see in Buffalo, we see in Dallas, we see in Kansas City.
Right? Yeah.
It's all over the place where, again, I'm not talking about running a lot. I'm talking about when it's time to get it, you can go get it. We've now had Russell Wilson. He's a guy who's gotten banged around doing it. But he still has that element of his game where it's a 3rd and 10 and we got to get it. I can go get it again judiciously when it's time.
So I think Patrick Mahomes is the best example. And he does it more as the season goes along, specifically in the playoffs. You will see him, as you're mentioning, on a 3rd and 6. If something's not there, he's going to run and get out of bounds. Rarely will you see Mahomes lit up.
Yeah.
So the thing with Mariota, and I agree, that element helps, specifically with an offensive line that you're not sure about. Because stuff's going to break down, and he's got at least an escapability. Marcus is not a great runner. He's a good runner. And why I say that is he gets hit a good bit, or he hits the ground a lot. I'd like my quarterback to be able to get the first down and hop out of bounds, right? I don't need you to get the extra 2 yards and prove how physical you are, because that's gotten Marcus hurt before. But I know the play you're referring to that Michael Rothstein talked about in the red zone. The red zone's such a great area to have a scrambling ability. Because largely your back's turned to the quarterback, the field's compressed in one area, there's a lane somewhere else, so you're right, that becomes kind of a big element. And I don't know what's going to happen with Marcus, and it's training camp, and I don't want to get carried away. The stuff I'm reading about Marcus that people are saying is, I mean, he understands the Falcons playbook in 5 minutes because he already worked with Arthur Smith. He's got some physical gifts to him, and he's only 28, and he's going to be the healthiest he's ever been. I guarantee you, he is never, when he steps on the field, unless something weird happens in preseason, when he takes the first snap against the Saints, Los, he will have never been this healthy in his career, and I'll go back to high school probably, because he hasn't played in 2 years and taken those hits. So there's some stuff to like about Marcus until he gets banged around and until you realize his accuracy is a problem. And he's, at best, that second tier of quarterbacks that, like, let's say everything went perfect for him. The problem is with this team, it's not good enough to accentuate being second tier, right?
Right, and that's the deal. Like, a second tier quarterback, when you have a quality team, I think of a Jimmy Garoppolo.
Kirk Cousins.
10, 11 wins. You can get that.
Sure.
Now, it's tough to then jump over and win big games late in the season with that. But that element of what he has and what we see in the NFL, I don't need a Kyler Murray who just, and again, he gets out of bounds a lot, but also he gets hit as well.
Yeah. But he's an elite runner.
Yes, he's an elite runner. I don't need elite.
Lamar, elite runner.
I like when Josh Allen can go get seven or eight when he needs to. And that's that element that we haven't seen here in a while. And Marcus will have it. And I hope going forward with everyone to get scouted, I think that's just got to be part of your NFL game now.
I think the other part of, and we talk about this with Russell and Mahomes, they will scramble and not run. Let me keep the play alive. A play breaks down, and then in the past it would be Tyreek Hill getting behind the defense or Sammy Watkins or whomever. There's going to be that opportunity because of the height and the size of these Falcons pass catchers. And you notice I keep saying pass catchers. I don't, whatever you want to call Kyle Pitts.
Because the unicorn's a unicorn.
Right. So when you have 6'6" Kyle Pitts and 6'5" Drake London and all the stuff, like that's when the play breaks down and I can high point a ball and you can go get it. There is something there.
I do think that there's like a guy like Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers scrambles to keep the play alive.
Right.
And every now and then when he needs to, he'll go skip ahead for 7 or 8 yards. But you'll see him widen the field, widen the field, widen the field, and then he either throws it away late after buying another 3 or 4 seconds, or he steps out for like a 2 or 3 yard gain. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about Lamar Jackson because that has a shelf life to it as far as getting that hit like that.
So I also think Josh Allen, as big as he is, there's some cam to it. Like, these hits are going to add up on Josh Allen in the next 3 or 4 years that he's got to be careful. Marcus Mariota is not the size of Allen, so he can't take half of that.
But I think a lot of it, when you see it with Allen, they don't really do that until it's late in the year.
They start
doing stuff later in the year where they're like, okay, let's go get it, and let's use the big man to do it.
There's an intriguing part of it, to your point, of what he can do. And with Desmond Ridder, the funny thing is, you know who's also getting some decent responses? Felipe Franks.
Felipe Franks is a tight end.
And some athleticism there.
As a hybrid player.
And something. You guys make sure you're checking out the locker room each and every morning, as they've been doing a bunch of shows live at training camp up in Flowery Branch with player appearances, live interviews from some of your favorite Atlanta players.
This is going to be an 11 or 12 win team.
John Michaels is very bullish on the Falcons. I haven't heard that anywhere. That's a hot take. 680 The Fan live at 2022 training camp at Flowery Branch is brought to you by Hooters and Duffy Realty of Atlanta.
Chuck Oliver's College Football Today, brought to you by Duffy Realty of Atlanta. Because money matters.
It's good to pay the king.
Duffy Realty ATL.
Duffy Realty of Atlanta. You've heard Chuck talk about the three homes that Rhonda Duffy and Duffy Realty of Atlanta have sold for Chuck Oliver, saving him thousands of dollars in commissions. Also, my in-laws with the Duffys. 24 hours asking price, home sold. Happened so fast, they moved into my basement for a while, which was totally awesome. I've worked with them on the buying side. That's a great process as well. Duffy Realty of Atlanta, check out for your home buying and selling needs as well. The man does dig pirates, and I think that's kind of cool about him. Mike Leach, the head coach over at Mississippi State, he's going into a magical time. And the interesting thing about it is that when you take a look at Mike Leach's career, it's always year three. Now, it takes time for him to implement a system. And if you know about his history, him spending time at Valdosta and learning under all the people he did and then operating the wild offense he was running over at OU and then eventually becoming the head coach at Texas Tech, well, guess what? His first year at Texas Tech, it's a 7-6 year. It's very respectable, but it was kind of what Spike Dykes and the rest of them were doing. 7-6 the next year. All right, that's kind of what Texas Tech is. So that they're a 9-5 team, and winning 9 games at Texas Tech is kind of a big deal. Oh, by the way, you can go to like a Washington State. Washington State, year three, it didn't pop the way it was supposed to. They had some progress, but remember, he was taking over a team that won one game the year before. Well, it was year four, and they popped to 9-4.
Suddenly, everyone in Washington State's going, hey, we're pretty good, as they won basically 8 or 9 games for the next several years. Well, now what's happened? Mississippi State started 4-7. Then last year, Mike Leach had a surprise season. They went 7-6. Now, they didn't get the Egg Bowl, and they were able to go and survive in their bowl game. But this is supposed to be the year, because every place Mike Leach has been to, year 3, year 4, have always been the seasons where a team that he coaches starts to pop. They get all the offense. Everybody suddenly starts working. The quarterbacks are in sync with what they're doing, and the defense is complimentary. It'll be very interesting to see. Does this end up being that 8-win, 9-win team this year or maybe next year? Because, again, it is the SEC. That is a difficult thing to do. But if you look at the history of Mike Leach as a coach, it's always year 3 into year 4 when the magic begins to really take flight.
Chuck Oliver's College Football Today, brought to you by Duffy Realty of Atlanta on the College Football Voice of the South, 680 The Fan.
When the folks at Major League Baseball added to the playoff format, now, they told us it was because we want to have more teams involved in the pennant race. Well, no, they wanted more money. So, okay, there's the obvious part. But the theory of more competitive teams hanging around the third wildcard chase, they thought was going to result in less trades at the deadline, which I always thought was a convoluted thing. The best thing about the NBA, better than the NBA Finals, better than the NBA first round, better than the play-in, is NBA offseason. The NBA offseason has become a whole world to its own where the transactions, the rumors, and all the stuff that's happened over the last 10 years has made the NBA a wonderful soap opera.
The drama.
Well, Bob Nightingale tweeted that there were 70 trades made from June 1st on in Major League Baseball involving players with 35 Major League Baseball All-Star appearances, which is the second most dating back to 1997. So you're talking about 25 years. Teams were like, yeah, we're still willing to move this guy, and we're still willing to move that All-Star. And here's what it created. Front Office Sports had this note that headlined by the Juan Soto blockbuster trade. The trade deadline resulted in record digital success for Major League Baseball. They had 11.5 million article views on its site and its apps, the single highest date of traffic in the 22-year history of its digital. People love the drama. People love the transaction. People love the rumor. Where's Juan Soto going? The Juan Soto thing was the closest thing to anything the NBA's ever done. Young superstar who wanted to be traded for a big haul. You should try to embrace the deadline and make it a bigger thing, not try to downplay it by selling me more teams are in the race so they're going to hold on to their stars.
I'm just thinking about this. So since June 1, the Braves have had like 5 trades, and that's just like one team.
Right.
And, yeah, that's a lot of player movement. And, again, if you want to attribute it to the second wild card and everything else they're doing to expand the playoffs, maybe that's
They put it in to hopefully have teams hold on more.
Yeah.
Like the Orioles, and I don't want to bore the audience with this, but the Orioles made some tough decisions in the midst of a time when they're like 3 out of the wild card. They're like, we're trading Trey Mancini. We just don't think we're good enough to even matter. So it's not going to be popular, but we're not going to change our overall plan.
We're not going to go chase it this year.
Right. So it didn't affect them the way that baseball was saying, well, we think teams being in it will have them hold on to players more. Not necessarily, and I'm telling you, trade deadline fun is it's what baseball should embrace more of. Now, it's hard to come up with the Juan Soto type of transaction, but there's enough out there that should grab attention, and they should get these digital views and more interest leading up to the deadline.
It is very rare when the 23-year-old superstar, former champion, man, is on the block because he won't sign for $440 million.
Los, I'm telling you, this was the closest thing to an NBA free agent in his 20s going, or a guy saying, trade me, get me out of here. This is what happens when Anthony Davis tells, you know, his team, I want to be gone.
Similar to Kevin Durant. Because Kevin Durant, it's kind of shut down everything in the NBA. There's no movement until whatever happens with Kevin Durant.
Well, there was a lot of thought the same with Soto, that until that domino fell, people didn't know where they were going to go because they didn't want to use their trade chips.
Right. If I don't land Soto, I've got to be ready to do something else. Once he was moved, I think that just had opened up the floodgates.
All right, coming up next, depending on your perspective, this is either Nick Saban being a trolling savage or a pompous a-hole.
He is an a-hole.
I don't know if that's the case. I have a great amount of respect for the man.
Yeah, guy's a D.
We'll find out what you all out there think next.
It has been his entire life.
Invited everyone you knew.
I have found this is the only song that calms down Angry Dan.
You would see the greatest gift would be from me, and the card attached would say,
thank you for being a friend. Travel down.
Is there any point when we're off air that we actually get to stay off air? Is that is there ever, like...
You act like he turns it off when he goes home, too.
I think in my contract I should write, I will not be recorded during breaks anymore.
He won't care.
Oh, when there's
you think he's concerned about contracts?
Listen, when there's
a
financial penalty involved,
he won't care.
Every time he plays me when I'm in break, I want him to pay me $5,000. Or should
Thank
I say his
you
wife
for
will pay
being
me.
A friend.
You owe me $5,000. I'll keep it going. You want another one? You got another one.
You're going to be hearing from Lisa.
Chuck and Chernoff live.
Not paying you, Matthew.
At Big Game. Here on Ralph McGill Boulevard in the old 4th Ward. Come on by. We're here until 6 o'clock with Creature Comforts Classic City Lager.
Thank you for being a friend.
$15,000. You want to go for another?
I should have been
I've got you for the...
missed your calling.
I did. I missed my calling. What a shot. We'll be here until 6 o'clock. We'll turn things over to the Ford leadoff show, and then it's the Braves and the Mets game 2 of the 5-game series. We have a lot more on that action to talk about throughout the rest of the show. Los is in for the king as we continue to give you all this fun infotainment on a Friday. The 4 p.m. hour is brought to you by South Point Financial Services. If you're looking to refinance your home or investment property, you need to contact South Point Financial Services at spfs.com. Coming up in 5 minutes, with the way baseball is played today, what was once rare is rare again. We'll tell you about that in 5. But first, Lois, I'm going to play for you and the audience a piece of audio that has been making its rounds over the last few days.
About to make your familiar very angry.
I can't help what
I know.
I mean, I don't know
what
to do.
You mind. You don't care.
So, Nicholas Saban, most successful coach in the history of college football, has moments where I really like... I like that he tweaks people, right? Like Hoyt. That he trolls people, and he kind of gets what he's doing. And to give you a little context, Saban was asked about last season compared to this season. And let me give you a reminder. Last season's Alabama team led the fourth quarter of the national championship game. If not for a couple of big Georgia plays, it could have been another Saban championship. But we know that was not a great Alabama team. They had a 3-point loss to Texas A&M, 2-point win over an average Florida team, 6-point win over an average LSU team, 7-point win over Arkansas, 2-point miracle win and a comeback against Auburn. So there's some context, but it's still a team that, again, had the lead in the national championship game in the fourth quarter, and Saban had this to say about that team and looking ahead to this season.
Last year we had kind of a rebuilding year. Nobody knows for sure how all this stuff's going to come to fruition, but that's part of the excitement and challenge that we have to try to develop a team.
No other coach in America would describe a national championship game appearance, one in which they blew doors on the eventual national champions in the SEC title game, as a rebuilding year.
Last year we had kind of a rebuilding year.
If you're an Alabama fan, you're like, that's savage.
Considering they overhauled savage. The offensive line, had a couple of new receivers and a new quarterback, and yet still played for a national championship. He's like, well, they're rebuilding.
So the Bama fan loves him trolling everybody else in a savage way. The Georgia fan hears that and goes, what a pompous a-hole. We're national champions. Take your L like everybody else. Don't put your rebuilding-ish out there, because that's why you didn't win the national championship. And the reason I know is your buddy Hoyt was so bothered. And he looks at me and goes, you're going to tell me I'm not supposed to be bothered by this? And my response is, you already know you shouldn't be bothered. You know why? You won the chip. Like, you already won the championship. Had they beat you in what he called a rebuilding year, then be mad.
Here's
Last
the deal.
Year we had kind of a rebuilding year.
Those tears fall forever. All right? They always matter. You won it. That's it. Now, I told Hoyt and I told Hudson before the year, and neither one of them could get behind it. I said, this is your year. You're going to catch Saban. You're going to beat Alabama. I told him all year, this before the season even started, I go, this is the year you're going to catch him. I go, now you're not going to pass him. Nobody passes Alabama.
Not with one title, no.
They come back and they kick your teeth in the next year. That's what they do. But that was going to be the year. Okay, guess what? You got it. It's over with. You got your flag. Now, guess what? You'll go get another one here soon when it's going to be that next cycle where you'll have what he doesn't have. But now, guess what? He's got his reload. He's got his team back. You'll still get a chance to play him again, but typically... nobody beat Saban in back-to-back years to go win back-to-back national championships.
So let's find out from Brian Latavius Hoyt.
Latavius.
Why this is bothering you so much, because you know it's a troll job.
There's a big banner right outside the Alabama facility. You know what it says?
No excuses. And all Saban sits there and does, every time he loses and doesn't get his way, he falls on an excuse.
Last year we had kind of a rebuilding year.
You're Alabama. So- you don't rebuild. Shut up. Like, what are you trying to do here? I'm serious. What? You don't rebuild at Bama. Like, if Georgia falls short, am I supposed to say it was a rebuilding year for us? No. We're at the point now there is no rebuilding anymore. You've built that thing. Lowe's has talked about it for years and years. The machine grows.
Okay, but why do you let him win? Why do you let him win?
He didn't win. Indianapolis. No, I won.
Listen to you right now.
No, because I'm tired. I don't want to hear his excuse making. No excuses, Saban.
What he just said, play it again.
Last year we had kind of a rebuilding year.
The fact that you didn't laugh it off and then remember a parade and a championship, but your first thing was to yell at him. Oh, Nick Saban, F you, blah, blah.
Hold on.
That he beat you.
Was Saban in a parade last year?
No.
Was Brian Hoyt?
Yes. So, like, why are you?
You won it.
He drew you off sides. He drew you off sides in a way that, like, nobody's ever been drawn out, and you fell for
Hoyt
it.
Hoyt had people in a parade cheering for Hoyt.
Right. He said that to troll you and his fans. He only cares what the Bama fans think, so they're like, oh, hell, Coach said we was rebuilding last year. I don't know why I just sounded like that.
Last year we had kind of a rebuilding year.
I know a lot of respectable Alabama fans.
I will say this. That team was not very good. To Alabama standards.
Not to their standards.
The quarterback was special.
Yeah.
They had a couple of wide receivers that were dynamic, and they had the best defensive player on the planet.
Offensive line that was shaky and a backfield that was pretty questionable.
Well, that's a lot you just mentioned, by the way, for a rebuilding year. But continue, Matt. Go ahead.
No, by the Alabama
standards.
Why do you think I went into the year, Hoyt, telling you this was the year you're going to catch up?
Why does this bother you so much? You won the championship.
Hoyt, because you're not supposed to talk. You're not allowed to talk if you lose the damn game. And you lost. You're not allowed to say anything.
Good day, sir.
Hoyt, I told you in July and August, you had a hard time coming along this ride. I told you this is the year you get them.
And you got them.
And you got them, and that's it, and that's all. It doesn't matter what he says from here.
You won. He didn't win, so that's why he's got it. He doesn't care. His ideas, and when he says we were in a rebuilding thing, he's snickering because he knows maybe this will get some Georgia fan off the spot. And you know what he just did? He got you off your spot.
Hoyt gets flagged. That's 5 yards.
I don't know. That's just so obvious. I expect more out of a varsity letterman like Hoyt.
And a champion.
Had you lost to him, and he said how this would have been more savage.
Oh, yeah.
Had they beaten you by one and Saban goes, to win a title in a rebuilding year was pretty cool, then be mad at him. You won.
You have to also remember, too, that you got the guy to admit to Kirby on the field, you guys kicked our ass in that fourth quarter.
So
he was smiling and kind of like laughing afterwards.
You won all levels.
Well, you know what? He realized his team, it wasn't because they made mistakes. It wasn't because they were poorly coached.
They were outmanned.
They got beat in the fourth quarter. And there was something that to him was, that's what it takes to beat us. They came out and they beat us and they kicked our butts in the fourth quarter.
Coming up in 5 minutes this season. Can only be one of two things for Arthur Smith.
Sucks. Or steaming pile of
No. It can only be one of two things for Arthur Smith, which is a very weird place to be for a second year NFL head coach. I'll explain coming up.
You're going to pick from those two?
No, I don't. I'm going to go offshoot from what were the two that he played?
Steaming pile of
yes.
Or sucks.
Yes, we'll do something different in 5 minutes. In the meanwhile, though.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com. And then call us for a free in-home consultation.
Baseball, much like 90s fashion, is coming back around to give us these rare moments in the game.
It's fun when something becomes rare. Like, for instance, we used to talk about the immaculate inning. And for those of you who don't know, an immaculate inning is a 9-pitch inning, 3 strikeouts. Those are rare. And in the history of baseball, those happen less than no-hitters, less than perfect games. But the league has now changed where you got a lot of guys that throw about 9,500 miles an hour, and a lot of guys like to swing at pitches. We had a multiple of immaculate innings in the same game this year, okay? Where, like, it was the Rangers and another team where they had two immaculate innings in the same game. Again, a rarity.
But I believe it was also against the same three batters.
Yeah, the same three batters had the exact same outcome against two different pitchers.
Right.
So here's the fun part. This has now gone to about 10 years since we had our last perfect game. Now, Matt, if I was to tell you that a former Atlanta Brave, sort of, was the last pitcher to throw the last perfect game in Major League Baseball in August 15th of 2012. How long would it take you to come up with that?
Is it Cole Hamels?
It is not Cole Hamels.
Dallas Keuchel.
It is a righty. It was in the American League.
But he was a Brave for a moment?
Yes. I'll give you a hint.
Pop quiz early, huh?
Spring training.
Who's that guy?
He has a great nickname. It's Aaron Regal.
Felix Hernandez.
King Felix was the last Major League pitcher to throw a perfect game. This happened August 15th of 2012 against the Tampa Bay Rays. Struck out 12 in that game, including the final batter. That is the last time it's happened because of the nature of what goes on in Major League Baseball, where a complete game is rare. Look, the league leader might have three, maybe four. Like, Alcantara is probably going to lead the league with, like, four or five just because he tells Mattingly, go get back in the dugout. But for the most part, you don't see complete games. So very rarely do you ever see perfect games. And so it's now come back into vogue that this has now become the rarity. No hitters are not rare because guys will combine for them and teams will swing and everything else. But a complete game where a guy goes the distance and is able to shut out a team for a perfect game, that's, I don't know when we're going to see it again because nobody plays that way.
No, they don't. And the other part of it, and this will frustrate people, there's a chance that a starting pitcher could be perfect after six innings, but because he's at 89 pitches, he'll never have a chance to see the final nine outs of the game.
No chance, because he's going for 135 at that point, and there's no way they're going to let him do it.
Forgive me for not knowing the answer to this. Have we ever had a combined perfect game? I know we've had several combined no-hitters. Have we seen a combined perfect game?
I'm going to take a quick peek. I don't recall.
I don't know. Maybe that was a thing at some point.
There's never been a combined perfect game.
Now, you'll see it at some point because, like I said, somebody, young pitcher, will be at 94 pitches after seven innings, and the math from the manager is, well, to get nine more outs, he's going to have to throw another 40 pitches, and they won't let him do it.
Yeah.
And which will drive people insane.
Because the crazy part is, and the only way to now get to a perfect game kind of number, even a nine innings, you can't strike that many people out.
Pitch count goes up too high.
The pitch count goes up way too high. Yep. You have to make it a point.
It's got
to
be a Maddox-like game.
Yes, you've got to be sitting at, like, he's got 88 pitches in, like, the eighth inning. Correct. And somebody goes, you know what? We're going to let him figure this thing out. We're going to let him keep going. It is a weird deal.
So the Sean Newcomb game against the Dodgers, was that, or was it against the A's, maybe?
It was against the Dodgers.
Okay.
Where he was, like, at 120-something.
Right. Was that a no-hitter or a perfect game?
That,
because it had to be. He had to walk some guys to have a pitch count that high. Now, Sean Newcomb, I don't know if that made him worse or ruined him or whatever, because he wasn't good before that. But he had one of those, and I feel like Fulte maybe had one against the A's where he pushed it super deep on the West Coast.
Hernandez, by the way, was able to throw the complete game in 113 pitches.
Which is remarkable.
That's pretty good.
I mean, that's incredible efficiency. How many strikeouts do you know? How many?
He had 12 strikeouts in the game, too.
Wow, that's extra. He struck out that many?
So the remainder of the outs, he got his fly ball, ground ball.
Just get a lot of one out, one pitch outs.
One pitch outs. Yeah. Had to have been doing it that way. But that's the recipe. And again, 10 years. We're going to hit 10 years since we've seen one.
But there is something fun still about either when you're on the internet or you're watching a game and the lower third comes on and it says perfect game alert.
Yep, perfect game through six. You're like, oh.
I don't care if it's Seattle playing, you know, the A's. I'll watch the last three innings or the last inning or just everybody wants to see that. But you're right, the no-hitter, not as much.
I jumped into the Houston game against the Yankees when they had the no-hitter earlier this year. Then I thought I was watching a replay the next day because they had no-hit them again in, like, the sixth or seventh inning.
Well, didn't we just have this with the Braves over the three games they played last week?
They got, like, the fifth or sixth.
Yeah, they had no-hitters in the fifth in each game until it was broken up. So, yeah. I told you there can only be two potential outcomes for Arthur Smith in his second season with the Falcons, which is weird. Typically, a second-year NFL head coach has to show progress, growth. We have to be better in year two than we are in year one. That's just kind of how programs are built. But the Falcons went 7-10 last season with a really bad roster, but that roster had Matt Ryan, Calvin Ridley for at least some of it, Russell Gage, Foye Luakon, and I would argue the four guys I just named were four of your top 9 or 10 players. So Arthur Smith's second year, to me, can either be described as a great surprise if they happen to win 7 or 8 again, or it would fall under the category of they did exactly what we expect. In other words, they win 4 or 5 games. I don't think I cannot, Lowe's, come up with an angle of, oh, my God, that was a disappointment. Now, if you tell me something extreme happens and they go 0-17 or 1-16, I'm not allowing myself to do that because you just have to be devoid of talent in a way that just rarely happens.
And poorly coached, and you have to basically be garbage every time out. And I don't believe that Arthur Smith would have a team like that.
The reason I would tell you the only two scenarios are they surprise and win 7 or 8, or they are exactly what we think at 4 or 5 wins. They have $62 million of dead cap money. Let that swim around your brain for a second. $62 million of dead cap money. Do you know what you could do with $62 million in real life money? Let's say you wanted to pay 6 carbon life base forms around $9 or $10 million a player. Just roughly go with the math on me. 6 players. That could be 2 offensive linemen, pass rusher. That could be a wide receiver. That could be, you know, a center. You could do whatever you want with it. Or what if you wanted to spread the money out? What if I wanted to get 8 or 9 guys in the $6 to $8 million range? I could almost turn over my roster in getting those right if I get them right. And I'll give you one last scenario with the money. What if you just went big? What if you spend it on 3 guys? You got the best pass rusher on the market, the best offensive lineman on the market, and you go out and get the best linebacker on the market. 3 guys, I just spent $60 million. How am I supposed to expect Arthur Smith to do anything when, how much is the salary cap this year?
You're in the 180-something range.
And do the math on 62 million of not having people. I'm having debt, which they agreed this year that we just want to get the credit card debt paid off,
yep,
and then next year we'll reset our credit score and we'll hope to be good. I can't come up with that third scenario for Arthur. And Los, here's the stranger part. If they go 4-13, he's going to go into year 3, at that point potentially with his rookie quarterback. And what do you think is going to happen in year 3 if he starts a rookie quarterback?
Oh, 208, by the way. Sorry, it did jump to
the salary cap's 208. Yeah. What would you imagine next year happens with a rookie quarterback? C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, whoever you want to say is the next quarterback. It's probably going to be an uphill battle.
Low talent around him.
Okay.
So at least he'll have the money to do it.
Now, you're talking about 3 years in of Arthur Smith, and he could have a record of like 16-35. How many NFL coaches survive into year 4 with a 16-35 record, even if it's not anything to do with your fault?
And this is where I believe, because I've never seen what the deals they got. Like when Kyle Shanahan got the deal in San Francisco, he got a 6-year deal. Nobody gets a 6-year deal in the NFL. Most deals like 4 years, and they'll typically fire you with a year left on your deal after 3. That's what happens. But when you get the 6 years with the understanding this is going to take some time to put back together, and it did. It took about 3 years to kind of evolve into, okay, that's what it's going to look like. I think that as long as you're playing, as I've talked about how hard it is to build a culture while losing, I think as long as you play football like you did last year where the good teams beat you, you beat the bad teams, but you also didn't kill yourself a lot, I think you can start building something. But you can't embarrass yourself. Like, I saw this article in Bleacher Report, and I'm the last person who still goes there. They had it as projecting Seattle with 4 wins, Houston with 4 wins, and then Atlanta along with one of the team with 4. And I just looked at them and I went, Atlanta tends to play sharper football than these other teams. Houston's sloppy. Houston's a sloppy team. Seattle's been sloppy for years. At least Atlanta was able to be that team that when you played somebody bad, they had a chance to win.
Yeah.
I think you can win 6 or 7 ball games doing that.
And I think
that's the high water mark. And if you're doing that, considering you're missing $60 million right in cap space,
that's what I'm saying.
I think you keep getting time.
If they go 7-10 again with $60 million of cap space,
you've done a good job.
Or, excuse me, dead cap money, that's impressive.
Well, Brian Flores did in Miami when they had the worst team in the league, and they were suddenly a 7-9 football team, and you went, wow, they didn't hurt themselves, and they were able to win 7 games.
And if you're able to somehow do that, and I don't know if they can win 7 or not, now when you're able to spend the $60 million next year, think about how your team is now at least given an opportunity to have a fair fight, even with a rookie quarterback if they go that route in the draft in 2023. All right, coming up next, we continue our countdown to the college football season.
Day 90.
29.
Day 20.
Or 90. It's getting so close. So close. So Los is in for the king, which means he's on 99 problem duty. Item 29 is around the corner. Tease us.
This traditional SEC power has what you want and what you don't want.
We'll find out what it means next.
So close.
Listen, I'm not afraid to admit, I'll dial up Entourage every now and again.
Man, that was Sunday evening.
It was.
Where you knew I'm going to get 30 minutes of fun.
The first three, four seasons, really, really good. Yeah. I didn't mind the end, but it wasn't certainly the same, but just a wonderful, wonderful.
You also can't do Ari Gold ever again.
Well, he's talked about it.
Yeah, it's so wonderful.
Like, that character got him canceled from other stuff, he thinks, because playing the role of Ari Gold. So
well done.
Chuck and Chernoff, we're live at Big Game.
Lloyd!
Oh, I mean, that stuff, too.
Oh, that entire just... Oh, you could do a montage of Lloyd's, and that's
so I listen to the Victory Podcast, mm-hmm. which is hosted by the showrunner, Doug Ellen, and the guy who played Eric. And they've had Jeremy Piven on and other people, and Ellen's like, I couldn't write the stuff I wrote for Ari. Now you couldn't, HBO wouldn't sign off. Nobody would. It would just be a din. This is only 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah. This was 04 or so when it came out? Like, yeah, right around there.
We couldn't do it. We're live at Big Game here at 720 Ralph McGill Boulevard, Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta with Creature Comforts Classic City Lager. Your chance to get gift packs, 680 The Fan shirts, register to win some baseball tickets when you come on by. We'll be here until the Braves and the Mets take over with the Ford Leadoff Show on The Fan when we're done. It's also a free cigar Friday with Grapes and Grains in Johns Creek in Chamblee.
I want to get like a grape flavored cigar.
I imagine that's possible.
And jam some weed in there and
that
just
might
blaze
be pushing
up and find
it.
Out what it's about.
Hell. They have an extensive selection of fine cigars, and they're going to offer you guys a 10% discount when you buy 10 or more. You can visit them in store or download the Grapes and Grains app. Check them out on their website at grapesandgrains.com. You can order online, pick it up in the drive-thru on your way home. I've got a $50 gift card to Grapes and Grains for caller number 6 at 404-231-1680.
You can come over to my house and we'll blaze up together.
Wow. If you're having sports problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems. College ball ain't one.
Yeah, Chuck! Day 29.
And this SEC power has something you want and also something you don't. That particular former and soon-to-be power again, in my opinion, is LSU under Brian Kelly. Now, Brian Kelly has something, and sometimes you want this. They got a lot of quarterback talent at LSU. It's no surprise. That's part of who LSU is. There's a reason why you've had multiple guys that have gone number one overall. There's a reason why the Super Bowl featured one of your alums. That's how LSU rolls. They have six-year senior Miles Brennan. They have junior Arizona State transfer Jaden Daniels. And they have redshirt freshman Garrett Nussmeier. Those are considered to be the guys that are, and here's something you might not want, the biggest open competition in all of America at a major university. Brian Kelly doesn't know which one of these guys is going to be the starter. It's wide open. In fact, he brings up good things about all of them. He's splitting reps amongst all of them as they're getting into fall camp. Everybody's getting an equal share. Now, they do have a younger player on the roster, but that player is not expected to really compete until moving forward. You can actually read some of this from one of our former interns, Wilson Alexander, over there, who covers LSU for The Advocate. Again, part of the Chuck and Chernoff alumni.
I mean, it's just proof that
we've got a huge tree.
Career makers.
I mean, one of our guys now covering, like, the Yankees.
That's a true story.
That's what we're doing.
Back
here.
Your hole, intern.
Wow. But when you get
no
out of your hole,
Chuck, right?
You get to go to other places. But there's also something else that you also don't want. LSU is in transition on their offensive line. Brian Kelly's been very adamant about this is the area where we have to figure things out. We weren't good at it last year. We're still not good at it this year. We've got to have some guys emerge. So when you talk about things you want within LSU and the SEC, man, I want a room of quarterback talent. I want plenty of it. Do I want a wide-open competition? Typically not, but I got to deal with it. Something else that I want, well, I also wish I had some more offensive linemen. This is going to be very difficult to figure out who is going to be the starter if they can survive the season. If LSU continues to play on the offensive line and failure to protect like they did last season, that is those things. They've got stuff you want. They've also got stuff you don't want.
NCAA, 29 days. You know my team don't play. Field's not safe. Players never run away, even when they're away. OT, OT. Games get intense when they go OT. Rivals pray to make it back in one piece. They pray, they pray. That's why dogs won the natty. Got a trophy in their hands. 29 days until football. Dogs are going to win again for me.
29 days.
They can't all be gems, right?
29 days till it's back for real.
Just like we have a collection of years of these, and that was the one he decided on. He's like, you know what? We're going to throw the new guys a bone.
News breaking from the NFL Players Association. They tweeted 10 minutes ago, we have filed our reply, our brief to the NFL's appeal regarding the Deshaun Watson matter. And Jeff Darlington tweeted, not major news here, but Roger Goodell's designee Peter Harvey now has all the information at his disposal to write the ruling on the appeal. The NFL did not give me a timeline for a decision, but they did recognize it needs to be expeditious. So I'm going to guess within the next week, you'll get whatever is added, and there will be something added onto the suspension. I don't know if six goes to nine, nine goes to 12, 12 becomes, you know, a year. I don't know. Whatever the fine that goes along with it. But you don't appeal, and if you're now the NFL, to keep things at six or seven games. I think they're going to go pretty big on this one.
Can I cut the line here and tell you what's going to happen?
Oh, I'd love you to tell me.
What's going to happen is they're going to add games. This will end up in federal court. It'll end up as six games and no fine.
Well, now, to your point, we've seen this before where if you're Deshaun, now you do take it to court. You do get to play in the process while it's playing itself. Who did this happen with recently where somebody played
this
the first?
This happened with Ezekiel Elliott.
It was Elliott.
The first seven games of the year. Also, Tom Brady pushed it until the following year entirely with Deflategate and finally did not take the suspension until April of 2016.
But it is worth pointing out, again, what has been missed in this, this was collectively bargained. Not only the ability to have the independent counselor or judge, in this case Sue Robinson, decide, but the ability for the league to then essentially go, that's nice, we get the last call, either Goodell or somebody he designates. That was collectively bargained. It's going to be a tough thing to win in court because, again, you agreed on, we both signed off on this is the process.
I'm glad I get to do this here because clearly you didn't hear me explaining this on the fun bag the other night. You were far too busy. So in both federal court cases,
I won't be listening to that.
Both times, the judges that were in charge, the three panel judge, sided with the arbiter every time.
It's interesting. I never know that. I mean,
in fact, here's one of the quotes from Circuit Court Judge Barrington D. Parker says,
what a name, by the way. That sounds like a judge.
This is during the Tom Brady one. Says that labor law means that a federal court has to be highly deferential to the decisions made during arbitration. What's gone on, this has been flipped because when Goodell would rule, then the arbiter would always back Goodell because he were an employee of the league.
Sure.
Now that it's independent arbiter, and the league's now taking, the league's just doing this for PR. This is going to be six games and no fine.
Right. I'm going to take the over. I'm going to go the over at 6.5. I think it's going to be a big number that comes back. You might be right as it plays out in court. I'm going to take the over, though. I think it's going to be more. We'll see what they end up doing.
Also, during the Zeke Elliott case, the federal court found that his claim of it being unfair as far as the punishment was not something that he could base it on. If this goes from six games to, let's say, 17 games, they'll be able to claim that wait a minute, your arbiter found six games, you're doing this, that's unfair, and the federal court will back
the weirdest part of what the judge, Sue Robinson, said was, if you go read everything she wrote, it was like, oh, yeah, guilty, predatory, like all this stuff. And then she only gave him six games.
That was her bar.
It was very odd.
So the NFL, this is, and I heard you say this, and to a certain extent I agree, but I don't. Because when you said they don't care about women.
No, they don't.
No. The arbiter, when they looked at it, said, well, here's what I'm ruling. She didn't care. The league is sitting back going, like, no, we want to give him a full season.
Maybe. But if you were asking them in the room of truth, they want Deshaun on the field. They don't want the bad press, the optics, and all the things involved. Deshaun on the field means more dollars, more eyes, more attention. But again, now, what's the judgment? The judgment is, do we care more about women or do we care more about Deshaun because he brings us revenue and ratings? If they were telling the truth, the women part of this takes a back seat to the money part of it. It always has, always will.
I will tell you, there's probably about a 75% chance he's on the field against the Falcons week four because the way these things get played
out. So it goes less than six games? Or
no.
he pushes
federal
court. That could certainly be the case. Yeah, that could be. All right, coming up next, if Braves fans are looking for good news, I've got it for you.
You got good news for me? What's up, bro?
I just said I had good news.
What did he say?
I'm glad he still does this.
I mean,
he don't care.
He has no care at all.
No, not at all.
Brian Hoyt.
Dude, you're going to be in the doghouse.
He doesn't care.
Or the steakhouse.
He doesn't care.
It's not the point right now. Plus, a couple of former dogs had a really good day. We'll find out who they are next.
Your call's next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.